Welcome to Cerro Talk Tech Chat 31 for September 3, 2009. This is Michael Wolff. Joining me tonight is the one, the only, the man with the plan. It's Mr. Richard Wells.
How y'all doing?
How's your mama now?
How's your mama now?
As you remember that from our first podcast.
It's made me famous or infamous.
Tonight's topic is Microsoft Windows 7. A lot of people have been wanting to know about it, asking questions about it. And Richard's been playing with it for quite a bit. Testers here at Cerro Tech, making sure that everything works as best as possible. Richard's going to share kind of some things that he's learned, and we'll also give a chance later in the hour for those of you who have played with it as well, at least the beta, to talk about your experiences, things you like, things you don't, and a chance for you to ask any questions that you have of Richard and myself. I don't even know where to start Windows 7. I know one of the annoyances for a lot of people in Vista, and it can be in Windows 7, but it's a little bit better if you know what you're doing, is this UAC, this user account control. So you want to start there and talk about there's ways to kind of put that thing in perspective so it doesn't get in your way as you learn a new operating system?
User account control, UAC, in Windows 7 is much more intelligent in Windows 7 than it was in Vista. XP didn't have user account control, or Windows Paranoid, as some have come to call it. Windows 7 does bring it to a new level. There is a slider in user account control. What I'm going to do is bring up the new Windows 7 enhanced search feature, and I'm going to just type in UAC.
Start menu, search programs and files, search box, editable text, blank, change user account control settings.
Okay, so basically when I typed UAC, it put me where I want to be, change user account control settings. So I'm just going to press enter.
User account control settings. Choose when to be notified about changes to your computer. User account control helps prevent potentially harmful programs from making changes to your computer. Default notify me only when programs try to make changes to my computer. Don't notify me when I make changes to Windows settings. Recommended if you use familiar programs and visit familiar websites. Never notify. Tell me more about user account control settings. Link.
What we have is a slider. It goes, of course, from 0%, which is never notify me, to 100%, which is always notify me. And then there are a couple of settings in between. When you get a user account prompt from a program, especially one that gives it to you a lot, you can actually tell it, stop notifying me about this stupid user account on this particular program, and it won't bother you about that particular program anymore. Another thing that uncomplicates UAC is in Vista, you never knew if you needed to press continue or allow, because if it was an unknown program, it was always allow a program or not. If it was a trusted program, but one that needed to make a change to your environment, something about Windows itself, in that case, you would need to continue. So you either had an Alt-A for allow or an Alt-C for continue. Now it's anytime a UAC dialog comes up, it's always Alt-Y or Alt-N. Alt-Y to say yes or Alt-N to say no to a UAC prompt. It's a lot more intelligent than it used to be.
One of my concerns has to do with power saving. I think there's been some enhancements made to save battery life, but sometimes putting your computer into a sleep or hibernate type mode, sometimes when you wake it up, causes issues for screen reading technology. So what might users do to address that?
All the way back to Windows XP. As a matter of fact, there are many knowledge base articles on Microsoft's website about this. Anytime you suspend hardware for any reason, put it into a power-saving state. This, by the way, is not only for screen readers. This applies to scanners, printers, any kind of peripheral devices. Anytime you turn on power saving, what you are doing is setting yourself up for a potential for a device not to work correctly after you come out of power saving until you either restart the service, which most people don't know how to do that, or reboot your computer. So I recommend against using any kind of power savings in any situation. If you need to shut your machine down, if you're worried about power saving, me personally, I just would turn my computer off if I'm that worried about it. From a benchmark testing point of view, I'm sad to say that Windows 7 has been proven and documented that it does cut battery life by 33% in all cases over previous versions of Windows. CPU power required. This has been benchmarked on laptops and netbooks and has been proven to be true.
I know some people were considering upgrading their netbooks from XP to Windows 7, so you're saying right off the bat that you're going to lose 33% of your battery life.
If you're getting 5.5 hours out of your netbook right now, expect to get about 3.
That's one downside. I assume there are some pros to it. So why don't you talk about any new features or enhancements that have been added to 7, I guess first versus Vista, and then maybe going back to XP.
The search feature has been one of the most useless features to Windows users who use Access technology. over the past few years, and Windows 7 sort of fixes that. I know that to uninstall or install a program in Windows 7, you do it in the same way that you would in Windows Vista. You want to open an applet called Programs and Features. In order to get there, I could either open Control Panel and tab until I get to it, because there is no classic way to set Windows 7 anymore, at least not without some unsupported hacks. The best way to find, if you know what you're looking for, is to do it through the search box, which I will demonstrate again now. I'm going to bring up the Start menu.
Start menu, search programs and files, search box, editable text, blank.
You always land in that search box when you bring up the Start menu. So now I'm just going to begin typing Programs and Features.
Programs and Features.
Okay, I just type Programs and, so it's already there. So all I have to do is press Enter.
Windows Explorer, folder view, list, 7%.
If I down arrow, it will start reading my installed programs.
Torrent, install 704.57, acrobat.com, Adobe IR, Adobe Flash Player 10 ActiveX.
So anything that I want to uninstall, I would simply press the applications key.
Menu opened, uninstall, U.
And that's the very first option, just to give you a quick idea of how to do that.
Menu closed.
The search feature is probably one of the best things. Let me talk a little bit about the taskbar in Windows 7. It has changed. The functionality of the taskbar has changed a lot.
Taskbar.
And the taskbar now, those of you who use the Mac will understand this, it is more synonymous with the dock. It allows you to pin or unpin programs you use a lot. Unlike previous versions of Windows, a program does not have to be running to be in the taskbar. It basically is in the taskbar. It's not running, but it's there.
Running applications toolbar, Internet Explorer button.
See, right now, I have Internet Explorer in my taskbar. If I press right arrow.
Windows Explorer button.
Windows Explorer.
Windows Media Player button.
Windows Media Player. See, I don't really care about Windows Explorer.
Windows Explorer button.
I could actually right-click it or, you know, press applications key.
Jump list, documents. Unpin this program from taskbar.
Unpin this program from taskbar. When I pressed applications key, I pressed up arrow once, and that allowed me to come to an option that says unpin this program from the taskbar. So if I were to press enter here, then it would be gone. Now, what's cool about that is anytime I want to run the program again, I actually just go to start all programs and run the program. And then if I want to repin it to the taskbar, it's back in the taskbar list. It would allow me to then repin it to the taskbar. So the programs that you use the most are the ones that you're going to want to pin to your taskbar. Windows 7, if you've used Vista, quite frankly, this is going to feel like Vista Service Pack 3. It's not going to feel that different than Vista.
What about email?
Email in Windows 7 is non-existent. If you're not a subscriber to the SAMNet community, do so before acquiring Windows 7 so that you will have email built in to Windows 7. Otherwise, you're going to have to consider either a purchase of Microsoft Office to use Outlook as your email program, or go to something like Thunderbird, the email companion to Firefox.
And as far as the browser, you're pretty much locked to IE8, right?
Oh, no. You can use Firefox.
Well, I mean, as far as Internet Explorer, you...
You begin with IE8 in Windows 7. You can't go to IE7 or IE6. Windows Media Player, I understand, 12 is about to be released.
Now, there's been some misinformation about speech engines. A lot of folks like to use the Via Voice to get that eloquent speech, and there's been rumors that that's not available in Windows 7, but that's not true, is it?
Well, let's find out. Okay, I'm in my Windows 7 machine. I'll just...
System access menu. Connect. System access. Text-to-speech preferences. Text-to-speech engine. List opened. ETI Eloquence.
This is a test of your speech settings. List closed.
Looks like it works to me.
I hear it loud and clear. And before people ask, we better explain where they got to get it. The Via Voice there is this app before that comes with Windows 6.1 or the...
Open Book versions 7 and earlier. Of course, that's the actual Via Voice, but it's the same engine, basically. Also, Kurzweil 1000 ships with the Eloquence synthesizer. You cannot use the directly supported Eloquence voices, such as ones shipped with OpenBook 8 and later, and JAWS, any version.
The differences between the 32-bit and the 64-bit versions in terms of speed or apps that work in one and not the other, just your impressions of the differences between the two.
I'm not seeing any differences in speed between 64 and 32-bit apps. If you are in a 64-bit environment, just make sure that you get the installer for that particular application. If you decide to dive into 64-bit Windows, be aware that there are a lot of drivers that aren't written. Really do your homework. Find the scanner that works. Printers, a lot of printers don't work. The installer is not that accessible, even if you upgrade, unless you set up an unattended install, which is a bit of a hassle to do. You better have some eyeballs around when you do it, because there are going to be some areas of it that are not accessible at all, the upgrade. Let's talk about the kind of the pre-upgrade. When you first run the Windows 7 installer, one of the very first things it does is it checks compatibility of your hardware and your software, specifically if you do the upgrade. If you wiped it, of course, it can't do that check. You're going to want to pay attention, and it's going to create a compatibility file on your desktop, a software and hardware compatibility report. And anything that it says to do, take it seriously. Do it. If it says uninstall iTunes, uninstall it. If it says uninstall some HP game pack, uninstall it before you upgrade. If there are hardware drivers that you're going to need to get, in 4 out of 5 cases, when I installed it on this OEM HP computer that I'm using, it basically told me you can reinstall this application or an updated driver will be installed once you install Windows 7. Pay attention to those things. Exit the install like they tell you to and go uninstall any software that they tell you to uninstall. If you forget what they said, they drop that compatibility report right on your desktop. It's an HTML file. It will open up an IE, so just find it and press enter on it. It will take you right through what you can't have installed while you're upgrading it.
You're telling me you're not seeing any difference between 32 and 64-bit. First, I guess, is the RAM issue. 32-bit, you're limited to 4 gig minus whatever your video card's using, right?
It's still going to be under 4 gigs that it limits you to. It doesn't sound bad, but especially if you run virtual environments under 64-bit Windows like I do, XP and Vista and other things, you do want to have a lot of RAM. 3.5 gigs of RAM, basically, it's going to ignore if you have a 32-bit operating system. VMware, a very expensive solution. One of the new features of Windows 7 that people who use virtual machines are going to like is there is a virtual environment that you can run. I have not researched it much. I've only seen a couple of tweets about it, but I understand it is a free add-on to Windows that you can run previous versions of Windows if you absolutely have to have applications that just will not run even in compatibility mode for your particular version of Windows.
Can you build the operating systems yourself, like on the Mac, or do you need sighted help to get the initial build?
In VMware, you don't need any sighted assistance. It just works. I mean, everything is accessible. But in the case of the Microsoft solution, I have not looked at it.
Yeah, we should do a tech chat on VMware. It's a very powerful. It's not for everyone because it's not free, folks.
The PC version is like $179. Fusion, which is the Mac version, is only like $80. Again, Microsoft Windows 7 does have its own virtual environment.
And yes, if people are squabbling over the price, something to keep in mind is here you can run multiple operating systems, which means it might save you in buying another computer or two.
No question about that. And we like it here because if we need to reproduce something and then we can just blow that one away without reformatting our hard drives. And an hour later, we got another virtual machine running. Clean and pristine and mean and lean.
They should use that little advisor to even see if their machine's compatible.
Microsoft is still saying that the minimum is 1 gig of RAM. And I've certainly seen that run. I've seen Windows 7 run just fine with 1 gig of RAM. Now, of course, memory is like money. More is better. The more RAM, the better. If all you've got is 1 gig of RAM, come on in, the water's fine. It will actually run faster. Now, one thing that I will say about Windows 7 is if you've been running Windows Vista, you will be pleasantly surprised. It is 50-60% faster than Vista in every area, starting programs and anything you throw at it, it's faster. Just reaction time to keystrokes, everything about Windows 7 is faster.
But I'm curious if it is faster or comparable to Windows XP in terms of speed.
It's not as fast as XP. If you're upgrading from Vista, you're going to be, oh man, this is wonderful. If you're upgrading from XP, it is going to slow you down. It's going to knock the fire out of your battery life if you're using it on a portable computer. Those are not my benchmarks. Those come straight from labs where this has actually been done and just done normal tasks. Even an idling machine will run a battery down 33% quicker in Windows 7 than it does in Windows XP or Vista.
When I first ran it, I thought, well, cool, it detected my sound card. But that's not necessarily the case. They've come up with their own sound driver, right? Better than nothing, but you may not get the ultimate results until you get the true sound driver for your device.
Right? Exactly. At least with my SoundMax card and my HP laptop, while the line out stuff worked just fine, the headphone jack and the speakers worked just fine and all that. When I tried to plug an analog microphone into it, no way to get the sound going. The only way I could get sound input on that machine was by using a USB device. This is just me. I have never seen analog input work on a Windows 7 machine, personally. Neither microphone nor line in. And it may be sound card dependent. If you have one of the later Realtek cards or you have Sound Blaster or something like that, it may work fine. But if you're using onboard sound like I do on most of my machines, depending on what it is, you may have a problem getting your line in and microphone jacks to work.
Now, something I've seen that I can only call a bug, I saw this in the beta of Windows 7 and in the final release on two different machines, that you run Narrator and you tab one time too many and the speech be gone. Is that me?
It just goes away. And Vista, by the way, even had that same problem. Narrator was not as stable even in Vista as it is here. I don't know if you notice this. Once you turn Narrator on, it's like every time you restart your computer, it's like it takes possession of your computer. So, okay, you ran Narrator, so you want to run it for life. But it's hard to get rid of.
What about finding drivers? Is Windows 7 any better about detecting your devices, or should you stay and assume things are as they always have been in the past, and you better yourself go to your manufacturer's websites and get your drivers?
Well, let Windows find what it can. Windows Update is incredibly good now at identifying your hardware at the chipset level, and that's important because it actually drills down past software. If it sees standard VGA for your video card, the new hardware wizard really does drill down past that and looks at the hardware. It communicates with the chipset and says, what are you? Depending on the answer, it goes out and says, oh, okay, I got something for that, and it goes and gets the software. So Windows Update has gotten better in Vista and even better again in Windows 7. The driver database is immense in Windows now.
Some of the reports I read said the improved speed between Windows 7 versus Vista is that they've disabled a number of services. Is that true, or have you found any problems as a result of some of the services that they've chosen not to run automatically?
No, I haven't. I don't think it's true. I think it's more optimization, more under-the-hood changes that have sped it up. I don't think that they've really disabled that much. I see just as many services running as I always have.
It's taken a lot to pull me away from XP, I'll be quite honest with you.
I have specific reasons for not going away from XP on a couple of my environments myself. I have a Bible program that I'm very dependent upon for my vocation as a pastor, and I have to, basically keep an XP machine handy. And if all of them die, I'll run, a virtual XP somewhere and put the Bible on there so that I can still use it.
So what do we know about popular applications that no longer run on Windows 7?
Anything that won't run on Vista, of course, won't run on Windows 7. But again, with this new free virtual environment that Microsoft is offering, you'll be able to go back and run anything. One thing you can try to do, and I even did this to run my Bible software at Vista for a while, is you can run it in what's called compatibility mode. I'll just show you with the iTunes application.
Desktop, list, iTunes, size.
All right, I'm going to bring up properties on iTunes. I do that with Alt-Enter.
iTunes properties, shortcut tab.
If you control tab once you open the properties on an application.
If you have problems with this program and didn't work correctly on an earlier version of Windows, select the compatibility mode that matches that earlier version. Compatibility mode. Run this program in compatibility mode for. Checkbox, not checked.
Okay, so if I check this box.
Checked. Drop down list. Windows XP. Service Pack 3. List opened. Windows Server 2003. Windows Server 2008. Windows Vista. Windows Vista. Service Pack 1.
But that's not all. I could go all the way up to.
Windows 95.
You've got.
Windows 98. Windows Me.
Windows 95 or Windows Millennium.
Windows NT 4.0. Service Pack 5. Windows 2000. Windows XP. Windows XP. Windows Server 2000.
And Windows XP, there was Service Pack 2 and Service Pack 3, and then you got into the Windows Server.
List closed. Run this program in unchecked. Settings. Run in 256 colors. Checkbox. Not checked. Run in 640x480 screen resolution. Checkbox. Not checked.
If you need to run a different display setting for some reason for that program, say it's a game, and it requires a smaller color setting, either color bit depth or screen resolution in pixels, you can do that as well.
Disable visual themes. Checkbox. Not checked. Disable desktop composition. Checkbox. Not checked. Disable display scaling on high DPI settings. Checkbox. Not checked.
So you got all these compatibility options here.
Privilege level. Run this program as an administrator. Checkbox. Not checked. Change settings for all users button.
Wow, so if they actually work, that's pretty cool. That opens up some options.
The first fallback option is try to run in one of those compatibility modes. Play with that first. If it runs in one of those modes, then you're set to go. If not, then you could always resort to the virtual option.
I want to go back to your comments about needing sighted help to upgrade, because I did upgrade one of my machines, or maybe just talk about that. Have you done them all in the virtual machine? Have you done anywhere you actually went from, say, Vista to Windows 7? You can talk about that process.
In this case, I did go from Vista 64-bit Home Premium to Windows 7 Ultimate. There was a part of the process there, and it was no longer talking. Sound wasn't even working. And it happened to be the point where you have to enter the key. So at that point, I had to enlist the help of my favorite screen reader, which is Lila 2.0, to get that installed. By the way, that's my bride of almost 32 years. So
I'm glad you said it before I asked, where can we buy a copy?
You can't have it. It's mine.
Would that mean she's 32-bit?
She'll bite you 32 times. Yeah, probably. She's very good about reading screens for me and all that.
I think that's a prerequisite for a blind person to have a fiance or girlfriend or wife is, can you read the computer screen?
I know a lot of blind people who don't believe in mixed marriages. If you're not blind, away with you. You're sighted. Get away from me.
Likewise, blind folks who believe they would only want to be with a sighted person to do the things that they can't accomplish on their own.
It's a strange culture. It really is. One that I've never been involved in, so I don't know. A good podcast on its own.
This brings me to the big question of the day.
Yeah.
Why upgrade?
Why upgrade? I would say that probably the number one reason is because all the older operating systems are going away. If you are serious about learning the industry standard, this is why you should do it. There aren't a lot of reasons to upgrade to Windows 7, at least at this point.
Like this Toshiba I have here was one of those that was made, it came right out with Vista, and you couldn't roll it back to XP because it only has Vista drivers. I mean, I put XP on it, but it was useless because you couldn't do anything. You couldn't go on the web, you know, there's no Ethernet support. So certainly some machines that only work in Vista, I would say would be worth making that upgrade to Windows 7 to improve the speed on it and performance. Other than that, I'm not sure. I'm still kind of affixed to XP.
I would almost say that if you want a new machine, buy you a new machine for Christmas, and it'll have Windows 7 on it. It will be lab-tested and pre-optimized for Windows, driver-wise, hardware, software-wise, and it'll have enough RAM, it'll have enough horsepower to run Windows 7. Try to bring a older machine up to Windows 7. It might happen, and it might not. You might, at the end of the day, wish you had just gone to Best Buy or somewhere and bought you another new machine.
What you have is working. Leave well enough alone. Don't try to think you're going to get 10% boost in speed or cool features or something. If what you have is working, leave it alone. But, you know, Richard, I'm surprised I find so many people that will buy a new computer just because the one they have, nothing technically wrong with it on a hardware standpoint, but the software has become so corrupted with spyware, malware, some kind of processes just eating up all the resources.
Yeah. And again, UAC really has cut down on some of that unless you allow something. So, for instance, you go to a web page and all of a sudden the UAC comes up. If you don't know what something is, say no. If it says it's an ActiveX from Microsoft that you need to run some particular application, Flash 10 or something like that, that's one thing. Just browsing a website and all of a sudden UAC pops up. No, say no to that. That's a good way to stay away from malware and viruses and Trojans and whatever.
Right, so I know a lot of people just really bash UAC, but it certainly has its place after installing and setting up systems for other people less savvy than we are. It does get their attention, and they do think twice. It has its place.
UAC is a good thing. The only thing that you miss with XP is you can just install a good anti-spyware, anti-malware program like Viper or something where you set it and forget it, and then you're not worried about getting a virus, and you're also not ever nagged with UAC. I wish there was a way to get the best of both those worlds.
Again, that's your choice. You could certainly disable UAC, and again, I'm not recommending that, but you could do that. Install your NOD 32 or 64-bit, or Viper, whatever you want to use, and you know, then take your chances. But you make a good point about web-based content, because that's the new way that malicious software is being distributed. It is just hacking.
There is. As a matter of fact, there's a new one for Skype.
One thing that has upset a few people is the removal of the classic menu, the Windows XP interface that you could do with Vista. A lot of people don't know that you could pretty much make Vista look and function like XP, but not in 7.
Not in 7. You can't get rid of the classic menus. Something even more disturbing and revolting than that in Windows 7, and nobody in this room is going to like to hear this. U3 no longer works in Windows 7.
Not only U3, but auto-run, right?
Auto-run will work to a degree for some CDs, but U3 plugging in a USB device, that has been completely disabled in Windows 7 due to the advent of the configure worm. So no more U3 for Windows 7. You're going to have to go to SA2Go.
So there is no way to manually launch that key?
You could with Narrator if you can get it to run long enough. I hate to say that. You know, I sound like a Microsoft basher, and I'm really not. It's just Narrator is not stable, and can you get it run long enough to actually navigate well enough to even find which drive letter it is and to run the U3 launcher? As of this broadcast, even launching U3 is not bringing it up.
So again, we might go through just the steps to install System Access and SAMnet on a Windows 7 machine.
Like always, you just would do Windows R and type www.sa2go.com. Even if Internet Explorer is not set up yet, it will come up and it will run. And of course, it's going to be your default browser out of the box. You'll be given the prompts. Press Enter for the Begin button.
Right, and Alt R twice.
and it's just going to come up and run.
Once you log in with your username and password, and then System Access comes up and you down arrow near the bottom and it says install on this machine. Mm-hmm. And that's when you're going to get your UAC prompt.
And it's Alt-Y. Always right. Alt-Y.
So that's important to know. That tripped me up for a little bit.
Any other screen reader, you say Alt-N, but System Access, you say Alt-Y. No, I'm only kidding.
Yeah, you better clarify that or we'll get some hate mail.
No, I'm only kidding. Maybe you can edit that out, actually.
We'll see.
I've since installed both Windows 7 32-bit and 64 on my Mac in Fusion. And actually, I have to take back some of what I said about Narrator. It was helpful in both cases. Of course, with Fusion or with VMware under Windows, you can actually do unattended install because it writes the unattended scripts for you. The only thing it requires is that you put the key in at the beginning, and then it'll just take off and do it. I was able to install both operating systems actually from ISO images, not even using CDs at all. And I have both of those running System Access already.
If you happen to have a machine that Windows can detect and give you sound for, and you do the upgrade path, which still allows you to do a clean install, a fresh install, but gets you to a point when you should be able to run Narrator and proceed. Problem I had was that it would get hung up in choosing the country or choosing your region or something, and that was a little tricky. I want to see if anyone else out there first, I think, is actually using Windows 7 and you have any comments on things that you've personally experienced. So again, just state your first name and we'll call on you in turn.
Jeff?
What are your observations?
First, I'll be honest and I'll say I tried 3 times, maybe even 4, to switch to Vista when it came out. And I never could talk myself into it. Every time I installed it, I found things I hated about it. I've been running the betas and RCs and RTMs of Windows 7 since about February, and I would never go back. I should also first say I'm on the 64-bit edition of 7. If you have a device that doesn't have a driver out yet for 7, in most cases, it will accept the Vista driver. So, for example, I have a Brother label printer here that they don't have the driver out yet for the printer. Well, it accepted the Vista driver just fine, and off I went with my label printing. You didn't mention about the libraries. My God! It's like the best thing that they've added to the system. The ability to take subfolders of your hard drive or other hard drives and tag them inside of a library, which is visible on any open or save dialog, and say, okay, this is a document folder, this is a picture folder, this is a music folder. So if you've got network shares, or you've got multiple drives, and you've got stuff here, there, and everywhere, you can put links all to them right in the library to get there relatively quickly, as well as to have Windows index that material. 64-bit all the way. I have yet to see something that doesn't work on the system I'm running here, and I use a lot of applications. And I would say that some things like encoding media and so on, especially if you're coming from XP, if you've got a dual core or FAT or multi-core system, 7 does such a better job of managing those multi-cores that you'll see a huge increase as far as some of the activities you might do, like encoding music or re-encoding music or ripping music. So that's my 2 cents worth anyway.
Answer, Jeff, in your own words, why you like 64-bit over 32-bit.
Well, just if you have certain applications that are written in 64 or written for a 64-bit operating system, you will see an increase in performance. So, for example, some of the video and music encoding software has a 64-bit support in it that will allow you to get a little bit of extra juice out of it. And I'm seeing from XP to 7, just simply in the multi-core side of things, an increase.
Kenny?
Anyone else?
Connie Grace.
Okay, we'll take them in order. Kenny, your question, sir.
What is Saratech's solution to use U3 in Windows 7? What might be your solution to that?
I would say, as we addressed in there, simply hitting the start button and type in www.sa2go.com and pressing enter and Alt-R twice and logging in with your username and password, down arrowing to where it says install System Access on this system. Connie, your question, please.
two of them. I understand that Windows 7 is going to have a speech dictating thing so that you don't have to type your edited messages. And also, I have a Vista machine, and it's got its own built-in magnifier that you can't get rid of. It covers up SA's screen.
Windows 7. Jeffrey, have you played with it? Is the speech recognition pretty much the same, carried over from Vista, or has it been improved?
It's identical to what's in Vista, so your experience on Vista will be the same as your experience on 7.
She's got the built-in enlargement running with startup, and that's conflicting with system access. What is the method?
It's going to be that ease of access. Get in there and just uncheck those boxes in ease of access under control panel.
There you go, Connie. Ease of access. That's where you want to go in and turn that off, and that way it won't conflict with system access. Voice recognition, it's something, it doesn't quite work out of the box. I mean, you got to set it up. They really want you to read some stuff. It's kind of a training mode, so it learns your voice and the way that you speak and the way that you pronounce your words. And then it's something you have to enable. And, you know, it's not 100% perfect, but I've seen some people use it with a good deal of a success.
Are y'all looking at bringing back that pass key? I mean, because what if you run into a computer that doesn't have the, you know, internet access?
The pass key is coming back. It may actually get higher priority as we approach the release of Windows 7. The jury is still out, too, because you three can still respond.
Anyone else?
Hector.
Terry.
All right, we got Hector and Terry. Go ahead, Hector.
My grandpa's got a Toshiba laptop. Came with Vista, I think Service Pack 1. He got it in April, so my question is, can I put 7 on it? What about the drivers, or could I use Vista's driver?
Your computer should upgrade. It sounds like a pretty new machine. You've got two options. You can either do an upgrade that'll try to keep all the programs and everything as they were. I generally have not found that to be very successful, so it's better to back up all your important files, and then you can do what's called a fresh install that will actually put a new copy of Windows. I think it renamed your existing one to something like Windows.old, so that if you had any files or something, you could go in there and retrieve those if they were needed. So it should work for you.
What was the upgrade path cost from Vista to Windows 7?
Windows complicates it by having multiple different types, home and business and ultimate. There was a special back in June. I think it ended maybe the 1st or around the 10th of July, something like that. And there was talk that they're going to do another one that would let you buy like 3 machine licenses or something like that. I don't have the exact pricing in front of me. It depends on which one you're getting and whether you do an upgrade path, which usually means you have to first put in a Vista CD to say, yes, I have a legitimate copy of Vista and I want to upgrade versus an outright. Richard or Jeff, do you have any knowledge on exact figures of price?
Michael, you hit it on the head. The price will depend on if you're upgrading from Windows Vista Basic to Windows 7 Ultimate, you're going to pay more money. Vista Basic to Windows 7 Basic, yeah, it's probably around $100. I do want to rebut something that Jeff said, that he didn't have any problems with drivers. And again, this is going to be an individual experience, because while Jeffrey didn't have any problems, a lot of people have. Probably 95% of the cases, you could use Vista drivers on Windows 7, but there are cases, especially in the 64-bit environment, where all drivers must be digitally signed or they just won't work. Most applications you can make to work either through compatibility or other things, drivers that have to communicate between Windows and your hardware.
Jeff, do you have any comments on that?
No, actually, I agree with him, quite honestly. I personally had no problems, and I've installed it on 7 machines so far. And on all 7, we were able to find a set of drivers for it. I think the biggest problem people will run into with their upgrade is going to be on the peripheral side of things, as in the things you plug into your computer from like the external devices, like your printers and your scanners. Tried it with my hardware here, and I didn't have a problem, including a device that I thought I would have problems with. So, I mean, it's going to be a very individual experience. Your best bet is before upgrading to check your manufacturer's website.
Terry.
Go ahead, sir.
I was thinking of my OpenBook software. The scanner uses Twain.
You're going to need to run OpenBook 9 with Windows 7. 64-bit support for OpenBook 9 is in the works. Again, you have to be careful with what scanner you get. There are very few scanners out there that will work. My Canon scanner certainly won't. So far, as a matter of fact, I've only seen a couple of Epson scanners that work. There's going to be some peripheral hardware. There's going to be some legacy software like earlier OpenBook versions. If you can get them to run at all, it's going to be in compatibility mode.
And that may go back to what we were talking about earlier. If you've got a system now and it's working fine for you, then maybe you're best to leave it alone until you're ready to buy a new computer. That's a personal choice you have to make. To me, one of the biggest things is just learning where things are. Search is great if you know what you're searching for.
Yeah, there are things to remember. You know, like in XP, it's add remove programs. In Windows 7, it's programs and features. These are things that you'll just need to learn. The terminology has completely changed. One thing that you will love if you use Vista or Windows 7 over XP is add remove programs. You couldn't first letter navigate in there or any of that. And programs and features is wonderful in that way. If you ever need to uninstall a program, you'll find it a lot more pleasant than you did in XP.
The programs and features section is absolutely 10 times faster than it is on XP. So if you're going in to remove a program, it'll be much, much quicker. For example, you can make the control panel have a closer to classic type menu or a full set of icons in its list and be able to navigate via keystrokes. Another good one is in the ease of access center. You can turn off the graphics on most applications, thereby speeding up their loading and performance.
Hey, Jeffrey, could you give us detailed instructions on how to set the control panel? Something else that they've removed that I find revolting is the detail view, and that was even in Vista.
Now it has these columns, so you get a file name, and you can right arrow, and it'll tell you like the date and the size.
Question from Steve.
Okay, go ahead, Steve.
Other than Microsoft, is there a place where I can go to get the beta to do the whole process to start the upgrade from XP to Windows 7?
Can't upgrade from Windows XP to 7. You have to wipe your machine and start over.
You know, unless you're a software developer or a hardware manufacturer or just happen to know where to go on the internet, you're not going to have the official release. It's still beta. Now, I posted some on Twitter today. Microsoft's giving away copies of Windows 7 Ultimate for people who are a certain number of people who throw Windows 7 parties and invite at least 10 people over to show off the OS.
I was just going to say you get to the control panel item in the address bar and there's a combo box there. You can pull it down and there's an option there for all control panel items. Related to getting 7, I would not download any of the betas at this point unless you can get your hands on the final release.
In the 7, will all my synthesizers work like I have natural voices, AT&T natural voices? I have the Neo Speech for SAPI 5. I have I have True Voice installed for SAPI 4. I guess those should work properly, right?
True Voice you won't have any trouble with. The AT&T Natural Voices, I understand there was an upgrade, but I wasn't able to get them to work in Vista or 7, the particular 1.4 version that I have. RealSpeak Solo SAPI 5 voices will not work. The ones that ship on the JAWS CD, they will not work in Windows 7, at least in 64-bit. Strangely enough, all the SAPI 4 engines appear to work just perfectly.
It's Micah in St. Louis. The AT&T Natural Voices 1.4, they are SAPI 4 and SAPI 5, so in theory, they should work, at least dwell on the 32-bit.
Jeffrey, I was just going to quickly say, I have on the 64-bit edition RealSpeak running on there, but my copy from Tesla, it's a slightly different source. So yeah, RealSpeak, the full suite of them. I've got NeoSpeak working on it, and I've got Acapella all on 7 on the 64-bit edition. I haven't tried the Natural Voices, but I will, and I'll send an email.
We're going to put the wraps on it, and we invite you to join us next week. Thanks to Richard Wells for taking the time to be here tonight, and also Jeffrey Stark for his valuable input. And we'll catch you again next week. So until then, let's stay connected and stay directed.